This summer, I'm shopping the small space solutions that America waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. Bob's has everything from retro chic bedroom sets with plenty of storage, party-ready dining sets in four fun colors, stylish and space-conscious Bobopedic sofas to feature-packed power recliners that let me kick back all summer long. So, when you're ready to snag latest trends in small space styling, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court strike.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5/10 of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, and today we are here to talk some Lakers Summer League basketball. The number one seed in Las Vegas going up against the Golden State Warriors in the semifinals. Cannot wait. Been the most fun I've had watching Summer League in years. And I cannot wait to geek out about this with one of my favorite basketball people in the whole world who I know is just as excited about this as I am, Mike Garcia. Mike, thank you for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks a lot for having me.
It's great to have you in a circumstance where it's not like, hey, Mike, educate us in this crazy way on all of these guys, whoever I could think of. We're talking about players that are on the Lakers, that many of whom will be on the parent club, and really can't wait to dive into that with you. First of all, are you having as much fun with this summer league as I am?
They're playing so much better than I thought they would this season. We got a sneak preview in the California Classic, and I just wasn't optimistic after what I saw. And basically, in the period between the California Classic and Vegas, it looks like a completely different team. They look organized. They sorted out their point guard position a little bit more, and now it's a stable team to watch. I remember the last time we were talking about it, it's like, oh, we need a point guard. We need to focus on point guard play. Yeah. No, they're running half-court sets now. They're doing things off ball, so it's really fun to watch.
And they've got such a great attitude, and they bring a certain nastiness and presence defensively. I loved the game against Chicago, the last one that they played. I was hooting and hollering, in part because both teams are just stupid athletic. Caleb Wilson versus Adu, who we're going to talk about in a moment, that might be the two best athletes in Summer League. And then Sellers is talking crap, swatting Cam Carr, but Cam is talking crap back, and they both had similar personalities, but it was the Lakers who walked them down. And after a little scuffle before halftime, Chicago wasn't talking so much shit after that. And I adore this team.
I had the rewatch because I caught it after work, and I found myself laughing during the game.
That's the best.
Where I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's, oh, not only are they talking smack and we're like being good athletically, but we're up by 32 and you're really talking smack. Like, yeah, Caleb Wilson, you got your points. I already thought of you as the number one pick. I know what you can do, but you're kind of down by 30 plus and I can't really listen to anything you're saying right now because even Kaluba's getting his game going off. So yep. It's super fun to watch.
Absolutely. And I want to start with Adu. We'll get into Carr in a moment, but oddly enough, I feel like I have a better feel for Cameron Carr than I do for Adu right now. And it's in part because I think Adu is working with a different toolbox than a lot of different players do. And there's a good to that and a bad to that. There's a wildness to his game that the basketball snob in me is like, that would never work in the playoffs. But there's also a strength in athleticism. But part of the resolution of the point guard issues and the running of sets is Adu's been handling the ball and he's been kind of illustrating parts of his game that was like, this is interesting. What do we have here? And back-to-back years, the Lakers drafted between Adu and Carr, guys that were very high on Mike Garcia's board. And I know you're excited to get both of them, but I feel a little back-footed as an analyst about Adu right now. And I would just love, take us whatever direction you want to go in, because you've been watching him for a long time.
So one of my favorite things about the draft is you follow a player before they get their start, and you're always curious what they bring with them when they start to play at the NBA level. And everything in that backpack doesn't always come along to the next level, right? So I think it was in a prior pod that you had mentioned, oh, Adu Thero's having more on-ball attacks and he's kicking out to the corner. And when you mentioned that, I was like, hey, we flashed this in Arkansas. It wasn't often, but there were times where he would dribble his way to the paint and then the help defense came over and he found the open man in the corner. And then it's a one-handed skip pass off the dribble with the left hand. Oh, that's just what he does. This is like a secondary or tertiary skill of his. And I'm glad that he's finally getting to show it. More importantly, what I like is the progression that we've seen from California Classic all the way up and through game four of Vegas. Game one, it's like, oh man, this guy really needs to rein in his game. Mm-hmm. And I remember tweeting, it's not that the Lakers need him to get 20 points a game. He just needs to make a small play here or there and then stay within his role. And it could be like 2, 4, 8 points, a couple steals, a couple key rebounds. That's what we need. And in my mind, when the Lakers drafted him, it's like Luka's ready on the team to shoulder that heavy burden. And all he has to do is just finish these plays. And what does that mean? It's, oh, Adu is a lock threat. Oh, Adu is out in transition. Oh, Thero rotated on defense and caused a deflection or created a charge. It's those small detail plays. And yet his detail plays were like really loud.
Everything's loud. Yeah.
It's what makes it fun. I remember he rotated on defense and then he got a steal. I want to say it was on Caleb Wilson. I was like, oh, he's capable of taking charges, but he's just going to rake the ball off the guy anyway. So why not just do that? And then the Lakers are off and running. And it was evident in the last game against the Bulls where I think they had 22 transition points at the half.
Yeah.
And then they had 30 plus points in the paint. I'm like, this is the Laker team I remember.
Yes, right? Sir.
And it wasn't all half court, post up, dunk, or set up. It wasn't all that. It was out and running, and they were doing their thing. So just seeing that Thero was able to show that element in his backpack that carried over through with playmaking, or I call it short range striking, where he gets the ball from 15 to 18 feet, break down a guy, the help defense is late usually, and then it's just one decision. I'm going to the basket, and I know where my open guy is. That's the box, right? And that's all you want out of your finishers.
Especially when you've got that level of athletic tools. He starts out a lot of his moves with an inside-out dribble, and he'll either stay. He had a nasty inside-out dribble to stay baseline and got a layup in the last game. But he's also got the counter to that, which is the inside-out followed by the cross that he did a game or two ago against the Clippers and got a dunk out of that off of a middle drive. And it's just very one move and go that's super exciting to watch. But, you know, he talked to J.J. Redick, and Redick was like, look, we've got jobs available for you on the defensive end if you're capable. What have you seen from him on that end of the floor? Because I think that's his ticket to minutes.
So what I've noticed with this particular team, and I think it's also a carryover from the South Bay team last year, is this transfer of playing this 2-3 zone defense. And this has been a more prominent set for the current summer league team. And I know other teams just aren't ready for it. Basically, the current summer league team is playing 7 or 8 guys from their G League team. And you can tell that chemistry is on the floor. Because so when they played that 2-3 zone, it's not so much of, oh, we need a one-on-one defender on this guy and he's going to shut down a dribble drive or whatever. It's more, oh, the point of attack is in whatever spot on the court. We're going to shade these general areas to cover our ground, and they are defending within their limits of their athletic ability. And when it's Carr, and then when it's Thero, it's a lot of ground coverage that they can throw. So when the ball gets moved around or they see dribble penetration and they help off each other, it's, oh, we've seen this before. Rotation, deflection, rotation, charge, rotation, double teaming. And look, I'm not entirely clear on what the concept of the Sonics Amoeba defense in the mid-90s was like.
Uh-huh. The old George Karl, yeah.
But I feel it's like this, where it's, if the ball is, let's say, deep in the corner, everybody shades a general area. It's like a infield coming in for a weaker batter that doesn't have a lot of power. Oh, we know where you're going to hit. Or in this case, we know where you're going to pass. And you only have so many directions to drive. And the primary guy's just got to defend your shot. We got the rest. And so that's kind of how I feel the Lakers are actually moving. If 2-3 zone is going to be more of a staple, I don't mind it. It's going to add defensive flexibility to a drop coverage center that we're all hoping and projected to be this basic, a true anchor. So I'll take all the flexibility we could get, but Hero's on one side, and he is that defensive playmaker when there's a perimeter guy that needs to be stopped. Mannion is the default guy, regardless of the size. And then Carr is just, he's jumpy, but he's always rotating, and then he always contests high. The standing reach really helps.
Oh, yeah.
And he's really limber, and his ground coverage is so quick. It's like he meets you at the release point every time, and it's the occasional block, or it's a great contest. That's three critical defenders from the jump. And then on top of all of that, we've seen Kaluma really step up as this kind of positional, physical guy in the paint. And it covers all the general bases of what you need for a defense, right? Perimeter guy, paint guy, defensive playmaker, like a roamer. That's what Thero is doing right now. And a general high contest player in case the ball swings in Carr. That's a lot of bases covered. That's what's working for the current team. So I'm really excited.
One of my favorite versions of a 2-3 zone is when you've got a big athlete in one of those top two positions. Because the conventional look is you've got your one and your two at the two top spots, and then your front court is along that back line on that line of three. But I've always been a big fan of actually one of the forwards, if they've got the requisite mobility, that you can really be disruptive if you have that. And then, yeah, Carr's shot blocking around the rim, even though there's what a, I want to say 40, 50 pound weight difference between Carr and Adu, having Carr on the back line and Adu up top, I think it really presents challenges. Let's go to break here, come back. I want to talk about some Cameron Carr.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Mike, last time you were on the pod, I asked you, give me a list of just a couple of guys that doesn't have to be likely that they fall to our pick, but possible enough to where you're like, oh, man, it'd be great if this happened. And Cameron Carr was one of the first guys he brought up. And that's who I was hoping for on draft night. And boy, has he been everything I've hoped for and more. Talk to me about what stands out to be about Cameron Carr.
I think above the play that we've all been witnessing, watching all these games, is the thing that captures me the most is how he responds in his interviews and how he's got this approach of, oh, I know I need to work on this, but this is what I can do. And I'm going to do what I can do every single time on the floor. And he's just got this approach of, this is what I do. I know I need to expand my game, but eventually I'm going to do what I need to do. And then just get better as time goes on. And I just get this vibe from him that he's going to continue to improve on top of, I don't know, how many athletic shooting guards that we've seen in Laker history in general. And then here's this one guy that's an off-ball guy, which is kind of strange to watch because we don't really get those guys. Mm-hmm. And he's such a natural at it where I don't see him tripping over his own feet. And not only is the release point really high, but he also, like, we point at the vertical, and then he's got the long strides. And so the ground coverage, even on the offensive end, is great. But then he's got that 8'8" standing reach. It's like a standing reach of a 3, not a 2. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the release point is almost at the rim anyway. At least it feels that way. So it's exciting that he's able to get his game going, even with all these subtle mistakes. And his mistakes are not loud. I don't know if I'm just being a fan, but I don't catch him making mistakes like, oh, he's jumpy or he missed the rotation. I expect that at summer league level anyway.
Of course.
Especially when he's newly integrated to the team. The rest of the team looks a lot more disciplined. They all played together for a year, right? So, yeah, I'm really optimistic about Carr's game. And there's a whole series of shooting guards of similar size and athletic ability and skill set that just have long NBA careers. But I'm more optimistic about his career than those outcomes. So,
one of the things on the personality front that stood out to me that I've had an eye on that I think will translate to the NBA is at his weight, that's going to be targeted by other teams. And other teams are going to try to bully him to a degree. And it's funny because you hear him interviewed and he's this very pleasant personality. He's a happy guy and just seems like good dude to be around. But that can sometimes be, I don't know, maybe this is the old man in me. Older coaches, like that, they see that as a knock and almost like you're soft. But he's not soft at all. He is up for the fight. He likes setting a good screen. And he's got that sort of, he's got that assholishness to him that reminds me of Luka. Like Luka will do some crazy move and then knock down a jumper and then like laugh at you because you suck, you know? That like, he's got that type of air. And I know a lot of people don't like that, but I think to survive as, what does he weigh, 185 maybe? To do that, you got to have a certain, no, fuck you to you, to your game that he's got that you don't usually find in people that have that same level of happy personality that could be sort of a weakness and they can cower to that. And no, he's all about it.
He's got a level of comeback that I appreciate out of young players, right? It's where the ignorance is bliss, like with Wembanyama and the last finals. Oh, they're too young to even know that they don't belong. And it's true. They were. And
yeah,
they didn't win, but they got all the way there. And I said, I think it speaks a lot of the entire team, let alone Wemby as a whole. Mm-hmm. And then here you have Carr with this. You're right. He's kind of like happy-go-lucky. And then he talks back to him. He brings it back. And then he'll dunk it on you on a backdoor cut. And he'll just find other ways to burn you. And if you're going to be physical with him, it's like, it doesn't bother him.
Yes.
Defenders try to rustle up Luka and then it doesn't bother him. And then the defenders get mad. And then I feel it's kind of the same way at a smaller level for Carr. So that's the kind of level of attitude and fight that I want to see on a team in general, right? You kind of need the right set of personalities within a team. And then when I look at the Laker team, I think they're a quiet team. They're like, they're introverted. I'm like that way too. And then Smart was that vocal leader. And then LeBron is that vocal leader. And then you kind of need someone to talk a little smack and then be about the team. And I think Carr is that personality. And even though he's not a veteran yet, he's already like presenting himself this way. And I think it's infectious as well. So it's awesome to watch as a whole.
It certainly is. And it kind of leads me to, before we move on to the other guys on the team, Carr and Adu are the two that are guaranteed to be on the big club. In the context of this massive change to the roster this summer and the youth movement that they've gone on. What do you think is the right approach to those guys' playing time, their role on the team? What do you want to see? How do you want to see them incorporated?
I'm of the approach of just bring them in slowly. Because you mentioned earlier, oh, Carr's only like a buck 85. Like, he's going to get targeted. And I can think of when Lonzo was being targeted by Patrick Beverley during like his first game in his rookie year, and he was just trying to rough him up deliberately. I get that, but that's the approach at the NBA level. And I'm sure Carr's all about it. But at the same time, Carr's, to me, is in the middle of the longest season of his life. And I think people forget this. It's NCAA tournament and got to do workout season, then it's summer pro league. We're just regular people. We don't know what the physical toll is on their actual body. I don't know how their minutes affect their body one way or the other in terms of rest and recovery. I just know it feels like this feels like they're playing like 100 games in 11 months.
And they've never done this before, right? With as many AAU games as there are, there is no season before in their life that's anything like this.
Exactly. So bring them in slowly. If it's just a shift and it's the second quarter and it's 4 to 6 minutes at a time, great. Just to get the level of experience and get the bench player, just be like, hey, this is what this guy is going to do. And this is the kind of requisite NBA regular season energy that's going to go up against you. Just get accustomed to it. Great. In Thero's case, he needs to adapt the same, but he's like already NBA body. He's already the top tier athlete. So for him, it's kind of the flip opposite where, hey, when you step on the gas, you're faster than everybody on both teams. We need you to be at 70%, right? Mm-hmm. Your 70% is better than everybody else's 90%. And we just need you to finish plays and then just be on top of it defensively. Can you do that? And if that's 6 minutes, 5 minutes here or there for just a couple shifts, I'm okay with that. Could that hurt the Lakers for going from a 50-plus win team to 47 or 45? Sure. But I'm the person that is okay with that risk because you're not looking in terms of, oh, it hurt us two or three losses this season. It's more like, you know what this is going to look like next season? It's going to look like plus 5 wins next season.
Uh-huh.
And then there's still going to be cost control contracts. And no matter what we do with the roster, these are our guys and we're invested in them. And they've got this experience under their belt. They're going to likely have a summer under their belt. What are they going to look like going into next season? And then it's like, okay, 18 to 24 minutes. Good luck, opponent, because D-Ro is still athletic and he's still huge. And this time he won't get into foul trouble or he won't make these, you know, peculiar mistakes. And Carr just won't get pushed around as much, or he found another way to pressure a ball handler or whatever else it might be. That's what we're looking for in terms of growth. So bring them on slowly. Don't get him too foul trouble. Don't burn him out and hit that rookie wall by the time it's February. They hit that wall and you can't, it's like rookies can't really progress past it.
Sure.
There's like a physical stop. So I would like to see them make it to a finish line before projecting any further beyond that.
I love that. I got one more question for you on this train of thought, but let's go to break here. I'll come back and ask you that.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So we got reports recently that the Lakers are interested in Matisse Thybulle, and Vando, I think, is probably going to be on the roster regardless of what happens with Kuminga. I'd be a little bit surprised if he were the guy sent out for Kuminga. So if those two guys are on the roster, I view them as being possible guys who could take minutes from both of those players in a do-in cam. And take minutes from both of Adu and Cam, but I agree with your perspective of you don't want to wear them out because there's that physical wall that is very much a real thing in the longest season of their lives, but there is value to reps as well. And so if you're building yourself a rotation, do you put those veterans ahead of those guys at first and be like, your third string, if somebody's injured that night, maybe you get bumped up into the rotation? Or do you want them to have two shifts a night from jump?
Ultimately, this is on the jobs of the coach and all of the assistant coaches to make a group decision altogether, right? So the upside of having Vanderbilt and possibly Thybulle on the team is you know what you're getting. And just from the evaluating way too long, knowing that Thybulle was a 2-3 zone defender in college, it's like he brings that experience too. So to me, he's a special teams guy.
Love
he's
that.
NBA Mannion, right?
Yep.
Oh, we're going to play 2-3 zone? Thybulle, that's our point of attack. Go get him. I'm not going to be too concerned about the offense. I'm well aware of the shooting and his aggressiveness offensively and all that. But you know what you're getting every single time. And Luka and or Reeves will shoulder the rest of the offense because it's a bench lineup overall. No problem. When it comes to Vanderbilt, I'm one of the few mild optimists, but that's only because I've been watching him since he was in college.
Case when, for Vando. What's the optimist case for him?
Last summer was the first healthy summer that he had in forever. And this is what happens when you see an NBA player and they've had a series of injuries throughout their career. Injuries interrupt skill progression, period. They just do. And in some cases, it hurts them athletically and that they need to adapt to it too, right? So the primary optimism case is Vanderbilt is still healthy and maybe he gets to that shot and maybe he becomes a finisher. I know it's a series of maybes, but no matter what, the staple is still defense. And if you need to create chaos for those 6 minutes that he's going to get, he can absolutely be one of those people that actually does it. Does it have to be game to game? No. The way you see the end of the bench can be really unique. I like building a roster in terms of like the starters first. And then as you go down the line, it's more like the end of rotation guys are, hey, I know what these guys do and they're my special teams guys. Or they're my developmental guys, and it just so happens the Lakers have both, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a certain point with it, whether it's this season or next season, where Carr and Thero are just going to be too good to keep off the floor above certain people. And then when that happens, you know where the playing time goes, right? We had this discussion last year about should Rui start, and I know who I said first. And in my mind, it's, oh, it's Rui's contract year. Give him the opportunity. Smart is coming off an injury. We'll see what happens. How did the season turn out? Smart got hurt earlier in the season. He ended up playing more minutes towards the end, and then he basically got to playoff minutes by the end of the season. Rui became this all-time playoff shooter that none of us were expecting. And they both had this general improvement that coincided with each other, and the Lakers needed both. So because of that kind of situation, you need to foster the growth of both the end of rotation and the rookies at the same time. And you have to hold hands each way. And it's on the entire Lakers staff to be responsible for that development altogether.
Love how you put that. And earlier you described Matisse as NBA Mannion. And I want to know what it takes for Chris Mannion to be NBA Mannion. How far away is he from being an NBA player?
To me, he's an NBA rotation player right now. And the only reason why I'm saying this is because what did Alex Caruso look like when he started playing out as a Laker? Was he a great three-point shooter? Was he a legitimate backup point guard, playmaker? No, he was a guy that played defense, and then he was getting used to the NBA-level physicality, and then I think he was like 30% behind the arc, and he wasn't really a guy that attacked off the dribble. He was more of an off-ball cutter guy. And then when I look at Mannion, it's like the only difference between him and Caruso of that first and second year is that leaping ability. That's the only difference. But when I watched Mannion, you know what? He's more comfortable off the dribble. And he flashes that little baby step back within the painted area as an alternative shot if he can't get all the way to the rim. He doesn't really hesitate when he's taking these corner threes. And then he's still doing the pump fake sidestep and then shoot a three and then he still makes it. than Woodstock Emmanuel. To me, he's a player.
Yeah.
So I would play him. But I'm also the thought of, this is how you grow the culture within the team. We picked this guy. We developed him for a year. He's one of the best players on the current summer league team. He's the most stable one.
Yep.
And why aren't we just putting him on the parent team? If he plays whatever allotment gives Arlada out of the 2 week, great. I want him to play every single one, right? Because next year, what's it going to look like? I'm hoping it's 35% 3-point shooting. And then now you can't keep him off the floor. It's too good on the defender, right? So that's what I'm looking for. And the difference to me, there isn't really any. What's the difference between Kalumba and Spencer Jones? Kalumba has a better shot release. Okay. What did they both do? They're both physical defenders who like to tough it out in the paint. Are they the most laterally quick guys? No. Are they like super extreme shot blockers? No. But they know what their roles are and they spot up behind the arc. And Kalumba's been on fire behind the arc. I want that guy on the squad. I don't want Spencer Jones from Denver. We have Spencer Jones at home.
There's been a lot of that lately on this Lakers squad. It's like between Carr and Kalumba. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you want to foster this continuity of building a team and a roster, not just within a year, but over a course of years, and then you start at this South Bay Laker, Coachella Valley Laker level and saying, hey, look, we develop these guys, they make our roster, and they get playing time, and they're positive players. There's going to be another set of guys that, honestly, I'm not even clear on what picks the Lakers have. I'm lost in that whole minutia. But if they have that second rounder or they buy that second rounder and then they have the undrafted guy and be like, look at our South Bay guys. Look at our Coachella Valley guys. They played one season. They're on the parent team. We're a playoff team. They get the playing time. Now look, you can do this too. There's a very clear path. And they have a whole history of developing guys from David Wauba all the way up to Caruso and so on and so forth. And I just don't want to see these guys play for other teams. Right.
I love that. And Mike, one thing that I've heard so much more over the last 2 years when I talk to Lakers people is the idea of building a culture and a program. They want the analytics department to be amongst the very best in the NBA. And this is a fairly recent phenomenon that they want that. They want that sort of through line between that player we identified, we developed them, we really had a vision for them long term. And I think there's value in our GM and our director of scouting not being on opposite pages and adversarial in a lot of ways. But that idea of building a program almost like college is way more on their priority list than I've ever heard it be before. And what better manifestation of that is there than the guy that you found and developed becoming one of your players, one of your guys, rather than just it being this constant turnstile or constantly looking at the grass always greener and go get Spencer Jones, go get this guy on that other team. Let's build and grow those guys here. And I'm curious your thoughts on what does it mean to build a quality NBA program?
I think it says a lot about the team. We watch the Lakers with their culture with all those 80s championship teams, and we saw a continuation of that culture into the 90s, even when it wasn't all Hall of Fame talent. We saw them fight San Antonio for how many games in the mid-90s and take them to... We saw them play Phoenix in the first round, take them to game five when they only had five games in the first round max. That's the culture I remember. And it was our homegrown guys that did it, right? It was Vlade Divac, it was Dick Van Exel, Peeler was fine. Everybody did their part. And yes, eventually at some point, there's a decision that a team has to make where, hey, there's this Hall of Famer that we can get. And we're going to trade away these guys or let go of the guys just to make the cap room or whatever else it might be to create a championship team. But those teams in the 90s, they had their chances. It's not, oh, this guy, it might get the playing time and blah, blah, blah. Caruso had a championship with the Lakers and then went on to other teams. And then we see him now playing in the playoffs. And it's just like, that SpongeBob beam of I'm waving to Caruso while he's still playing in the final.
Yeah.
It's that. I don't want that anymore.
No.
Right? And I think as longtime Laker fans, we have this idea of like dynasty. And a dynasty has to be a back-to-back or it's got to be a three-peat. And the way that the CBA structure now makes that so difficult, along with the pace of the game and the very noticeable increase in physicality, which makes me think these rosters really have to be 15 to 18 guys.
Yes. Yes.
Not 12. So if your two-way guys are guys that are developing, great. If your two-way players are somewhat NBA veterans that have played to you, like Drew Timmy, if there was a Drew Timmy on the team, it's like, hey, that's a rotation guy. I know what he does defensively, and I'm okay with that because that's his basic big. And he could pass. He could get me 18 to 24 minutes. And I remember he got the Lakers a win last year in a critical game. Like, I think it was the Nets. But those are the wins on the margins I'm constantly looking for. And if you're constantly looking at these players that the team is investing in, and then you see development and growth, and they get these opportunities, sometimes they exceed those expectations. This is why I'm optimistic about Carr. This is why I'm optimistic about Thero, because this has just been the past couple of years, and yet the way that I've seen South Bay compete last year as one of the top G League teams, and then the way that's carried over to the chemistry of the Summer League team, and it's just, hey, we can have this every year. We can replenish these guys every 2 or 3 years, and then it can just be a factory of, these are our guys, and you know what? These guys are hurt, or these guys need rest, or we need to cut minutes off a starter because we're watching injury problems or whatever it might be. Manuel is ready. And boom. So that's the idea of culture that I like. And I like the idea of, we don't need to win championships back to back. Can we just be a Western Conference finalist for 6 years instead, and then just have a puncher's chance?
Get in the race. Yeah, it's like baseball, right? Where you got to get to the playoffs and put yourself in that position. That's a much more realistic goal. Yeah.
There's already so many other challenges, like I said, with the CBA and injuries. Like, we don't know what's going to happen to other teams. Maybe the Lakers are on the side of luck for a particular year, and next you know, they're in it, and there's a parade, and I want that. I would like to see that shot again. So that's how I see, like, their idea of grassroots, pick a player, develop, they're on the squad, and then the idea of a playoff window, at least, just starts expanding so much more because you're not thinking about the lottery. You already have a guy ready to go. So that's what I like.
Let's go. I can't wait. All right, we got Lakers versus Warriors, the one team to beat them. And boy, did they beat them at the California Classic. I think it was a 31-point game. Hopefully, Lakers get some get back tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. We will be back on Monday. Mike, thank you so much for joining. I had a blast hanging out with you, talking Lakers. And we'll be back on Monday. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddy pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one. Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5.
Bryant. Yeah. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Data centers don't wait, and neither should your supply chain. From power and connectivity to racks and critical power, Graybar brings the products and the experience data centers need now. And with deep inventory and logistics expertise, we keep projects moving from first delivery to final install. With hundreds of locations and a nationwide delivery fleet, we help you bring facilities online on time and on budget. Yep, Graybar does that.